The Green Cincinnati Plan aims to slash carbon emissions by 2030. With 4 years to go, is the city on track? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to offer an update on the city's efforts are City of Cincinnati Sustainability Director Ollie Kroner and Environmental Division Manager Howard Miller. Thanks for being here, Ollie and Howard.
Pleasure to be here, Lucy.
Thank you.
Great to have you both. Ollie, the Green Cincinnati Plan was updated most recently in 2023. What are some of those major goals the city has set out to reach by 2030?
Yeah, this is an evergreen body of work, right? So we've updated every 5 years since 2008. And by 2030, we seek to cut our carbon emissions in half. And that puts us on track to become carbon neutral by 2050, which is a slightly longer term horizon. This means, at a large level, a shift from use of fossil fuels to clean energy. It means moving towards a circular economy and reducing waste. It means improving how we get around the city.
Yeah. You said the city's on track. Can it meet that goal to reduce carbon emissions by 50% by 2030?
Well, the world's a complicated place, and our emissions go up and down. But when we measure over time, since 2006, we have achieved nearly a 40% reduction. So the clock is ticking, and we are working diligently day in, day out. We have some big announcements coming in the upcoming days that will represent our next big steps towards our goals.
Well, if you want to share any of those right now on Cincinnati Edition, just feel free.
Well, I will whet the community's appetite. We have an old landfill in the center of Cincinnati that has been dormant for 30 years. And we have grand plans for what comes next. If you'd like to learn more, stay tuned. Friday, 10 a.m.
Okay.
We'll have a big announcement.
Okay. Well, good to know. Well, Howard, what about reducing waste and increasing recycling? The city has goals for all that too, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We have very lofty goals. We have an incredible team who work on multiple recycling programs. Our biggest one that I believe most city residents are aware of is our curbside program. Those are those green recycling carts that are collected every other week. We have approximately 100,000 of those deployed in all city neighborhoods. And we have a very high participation rate. We'd like to increase it, of course, but we're in the 65% participation. We also supplement this program with some other programs. We have a recycling corner can program that we're expanding into all of our business districts. We have approximately 300 corner cans deployed now. We're on our way this summer to 400. Those are really important. They are neighborhood focused. They are visitor focused. They keep litter off the streets. They keep litter out of our stormwater drains. They really align our green philosophy, our green principles and values. And so look for the blue cans. Those are new, and we're really proud of them. We also offer a host of public drop-off sites. If you have recycled material that isn't convenient in a particular week to put in your cart, those are available in different locations throughout the city. Our busiest and most central location is at the former county building at 250 William Howard Taft. We're also, I know this sounds like a laundry list, but we're really trying to drive participation in our diversion rates. We're getting into large apartment buildings now. We have a grant that we've been able to subsidize our commercial side. It's kind of a weird space. A lot of people think large apartment buildings are residential. Of course they are, but our municipal code, state code, sees them as commercial facilities. And that's an area where I believe we can get some of our biggest gains on participation and diversion. We have close to, I believe, 20,000 apartment rental units in the city of Cincinnati. And we're just now starting to really tap into that. With our grant, we have a team that is enlisting all different types of apartment complexes across different neighborhoods. And we're seeing some really big gains. We're seeing some real big interest. And an accomplishment I'm really proud of is we just yesterday deployed turnkey recycling services throughout the entire neighborhood of Roll Hill. That is multiple buildings, well over 700 units. We deployed recycling dumpsters. Every unit got an interior bin, outreach and education materials to make the understanding of what goes in the recycling bin versus what should stay out very easy. The residents were super excited. And just a big shout out to the team. We had our staff, we had some Hamilton County resource staff there. The Roll Hill management and Roll Hill neighborhood residents, it was a great turnout, beautiful day for it. And we have a lot of other things in store, but I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot. You've got a lot going on. We're talking about the Green Cincinnati Plan and where the city's sustainability efforts stand. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Howard, you were just talking about recycling that's out in the neighborhoods. We got an email from Steve in Oakley who writes, recently 15 cans for the recycling of aluminum cans were placed in the business district of Oakley. Assuming the capacity is 30 gallons, this is a capacity for 4,800 cans. It's unclear where all these cans will come from since we have recycling pickup at residences every other week, yet we struggle to have the public trash cans covering the same area emptied on a regular basis. So, Howard, you were just talking about how useful those bins can be, those separate cans that are not for garbage but for recycling. Can you talk a little bit more? Why would you want those in a business district like in Oakley?
Yeah, we've seen since we've deployed these cans in Oakley and other neighborhoods like nearby Walnut Hills, East Walnut Hills, Mount Lookout, Hyde Park, et cetera, we've seen a significant drop in litter. They not only collect aluminum cans, they also collect plastic bottles, glass, and other recyclables. And it's really important that we keep the litter off the streets because they do make their way into our stormwater drains. They clog those drains, and we get overland flooding. You clog the wrong drain at the wrong time. We're going to have some water problems. It's also about neighborhood beautification. We want our neighborhoods to look awesome. And if these get us there, we're going to support this program. We also know that many of our business districts are also DORA districts. That's where we allow open containers. And those containers need a place to go once people have done finishing their adult beverage, and we prefer those go into a recycling container. Over the summer, we'll see increased use. I know there's more outdoor programming in many of our business districts. The outdoor patios open up. More people are walking on the street, and that's one of the reasons why we're ramping up this spring is to take on the additional use. There are areas that are used tremendously. The banks, we've had a presence there for several years, and we've increased our presence there. We have, I would say, state-level, national-level programming that we need to rise to the occasion. We don't want visitors, tourists coming into Cincinnati and seeing, one, that we don't recycle, and two, that we have a mess. And we're going a long way to reduce those two issues, and we're really proud of what we're able to do here.
Holly, we also got a question from Nicholas. He emails, and I think he was talking about the big picture Green Cincinnati Plan carbon emissions discussion we had at the beginning of the show. He asked, will this mean better transit options? Extending the streetcar would be a great idea. How much of the Green Cincinnati Plan is intertwined with big policy discussions like that?
Quite a bit. When we look at where our carbon comes from, about 60% comes from the energy we use in our buildings, and about 30% comes from transportation. So we can't meet our goals without improvements to transportation. We need to improve our communities, encourage walkability, get people on bikes, get people out of single passenger vehicles. We need improvements to public transportation, which would include the streetcar, and which we are seeing very significant improvements to the bus system in real time. And for everything else, we need to electrify our vehicle fleets and provide clean energy to those vehicles. So it's a multi-pronged strategy, and I think we have movement in all of those. You know, when we talk about policy changes, we have changed our tax structure in Hamilton County to increase funding that goes to public transportation. And so you're seeing Metro invest in new routes, higher frequency transit stations, hybrid vehicles. And then you see the city come alongside and change zoning to encourage housing development along those transportation corridors as we think about rolling out bus rapid transit, which is a fancy way of saying express routes from the outer rings of our county into the urban core. So there is a lot of policy work in motion. You won't see change overnight, but in years, you'll start to see very significant changes.
Okay. We also have a caller on the line. Hi, Anne. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yes. What steps are we taking to reduce unnecessary transmission of light at night for the Dark Skies International guidelines to better foster animal, plant, and human life?
Interesting. Thanks, Anne. Is that part of the Green Cincinnati plan, Ollie? What's going on with that?
That is not included explicitly in our climate action plan. And I appreciate the question and the sentiment, and I think there are a lot of public sense solutions that we are beginning to see roll out in other cities. But I would say it is on the learning curve for us. We don't have as much light pollution as some of the other larger cities have reported. So we're watching what policies make sense in other locations and thinking about what might be replicated here. We do have other initiatives that, you know, encourage pollinator species and work to enhance biodiversity. So I think your recommendation, your implied recommendation, fits within that larger body of work. But at this moment, we don't have anything explicitly addressing light pollution.
Okay. Well, thanks for that call, Anne. We sure appreciate it. Howard, we were talking about recycling before. I read that the city's Office of Environment and Sustainability had a goal of onboarding 3,000 new recycling households across the city by the end of this summer. You were just talking about the success in Roll Hill. Where does that stand? Are you all on track with that?
Yeah, we're doing a really good job with that. We call that our multifamily recycling team. And we have some very seasoned staff and some young staff that are growing tremendously, and they've made incredible traction, faster traction than I really anticipated. We are right now, by my calculations, at 2,600 units. We've got 400 more to go. We have connected with some of the bigger property management firms in town. Many of them are on board helping us to achieve this goal, and I believe we're not only going to achieve it, we'll probably exceed it by the end of the summer.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I was just wondering if Green Cincinnati has sort of made an effort to connect with Kroger and Procter & Gamble and other industrialists within the area to talk about how to reduce plastics and single-use plastics in all sort of systems of our consumer culture here. I think that'll go a long way towards making us greener. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for the question. Yes. In fact, members of the sustainability teams from Kroger and Procter & Gamble have both served on the steering committee for the Green Cincinnati Plan in the initial development and have remained engaged. Maybe you know this, but the city passed a single-use plastic fee years ago, and within months, the state offered legislation preventing cities from enforcing that fee. So there has been, I'll call it active litigation between other cities and the state of Ohio on what this could look like. There are other initiatives underway. Kroger on their own has announced their own phase-out of single-use plastic bags. That was pre-COVID, and I think COVID complicated that rollout, but we've seen many locations across the country successfully phase out single-use plastics. They are making headway on those goals. Procter & Gamble has zero waste goals of their own and have done significant work to reduce plastic in their packaging. Clearly, it's not eliminated yet, but you're seeing across the board packaging be reduced very significantly. And Howard can probably speak to this, but you see changes in the tonnage of the recycling that we collect because packaging is becoming lighter and lighter and lighter.
Yeah, Ollie, we are seeing that. Back in the day, the weights of our recycled materials were a lot different than what we're seeing today. The plastics are light. What's making up the heaviest weights are paper, glass, and cardboard. We're also seeing companies like Procter & Gamble work with our local material recovery facility. We have the fourth largest in Cincinnati. The largest is in Columbus. And it's really more of an advanced industrial facility. There's a lot of robotics, computers, things like that that sort the plastics. And Procter & Gamble is working directly with these facilities to help figure out how their single-use plastics can be sorted out and recovered a lot easier than what we've been able to do in the past. The other thing we're also seeing coming out of some of more conservative states is what's called EPR. It's Extended Producer Responsibility. And that actually has a carryover effect when a company has to be responsible for their products in one state. Many times they'll be equally responsible in other states. And we're starting to see that carry over into Ohio as well.
Okay. Well, if you could hang on, we've got a caller on the line. Anthony, be patient with us. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back after that. And later in the program, we discuss women and power and tips for building confidence. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about the Green Cincinnati Plan and the city's sustainability efforts. My guests are the City of Cincinnati Sustainability Director, Ollie Kroner, and Environmental Division Manager, Howard Miller. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we have Anthony on the line. Anthony, thanks for your patience. What's your question?
Thank you very much. I was hoping to ask, you know, departments of transportation, the engineers there are typically very resistant to reducing road infrastructure. And I was hoping that the Green Cincinnati Plan would be able to persuade them to accelerate some of those projects for road diets and just reduce our reliance on car infrastructure in general. Is that the case?
Thanks, Anthony.
Great question, Anthony. I actually think we're in the middle of an enormous transformation in Cincinnati and in many other major metros where for decades, cities have been designed for cars. You see different stats. Cities have 4 to 8 parking spaces per car. Most of them sit vacant for most of their existence. With time, there's more and more focus on walkable, pedestrian-oriented communities, and you're seeing that investment and that shift here in Cincinnati right now. Council has passed policy to reduce the number of surface parking lots in the urban core. The Connected Communities policy package reworked our zoning. Historically, you've had to add parking for any new development. It walked back those requirements to encourage development to be more people and pedestrian oriented. We do see road diets. We're seeing very active road diets in the urban core. Department of Transportation Engineering continues to pursue funding to reduce the amount of pavement involved in our primary corridors focused on complete streets policy. So that means adding places for bikes. That means adding places for trees and other vegetation. Adding space for stormwater uptake. So it may be hard to see in real time, but there's been a very significant shift, a paradigm shift in how we think about the role of cars in cities. Again, it can't be undone overnight, but there's so much land to be reclaimed for people in Cincinnati and other major cities.
Well, speaking of big shifts, let me ask you this, Holly. The Trump administration's approach to energy generation and the climate is very different from the Biden administration's. What has that meant for the city's efforts and just the federal funding that's available for what you all are doing?
That is a tough question and frankly consumes most of my time right now. So we are living in a moment when there is a rapid increase in energy appetite. Whether it is from extreme weather events and we have to heat through extreme cold or cool our buildings in extreme heat, paired with this rapid acceleration of the development of data centers in Ohio and the Midwest, there's just far more energy need than we have generation. And many of the tools that we did have to accelerate energy generation are not available to us right now. So that looks like the tax credits and the grants that were available for solar, wind, battery, et cetera. There are still incentives available, and we are doing everything we can to take advantage of those. We believe really the central step we can take as a city to move towards our long-term climate goals is to continue to invest in clean energy generation, bring new local clean energy online in a way that can replace coal and natural gas. And we've done that at scale now. We've signed a deal for 100 megawatts of solar that now feeds our city facilities and feeds into the energy aggregation program that powers the homes of Cincinnati. Friday, we'll have another announcement taking our next step, and we're actively exploring other projects across the region to continue to, bite by bite, add new clean energy in a way that supplements the current grid and ultimately replaces fossil fuels with carbon-free electricity.
Howard, can that reduce costs too? And I ask because I think these days many of us are concerned with affordability. There are the rising, you know, higher gas prices, higher utility bills. Is there an argument to be made that all of this work to make Cincinnati more sustainable will ultimately make things more affordable for residents too?
Yeah, absolutely. Our first goal, of course, is to get to cost neutral and then beyond. I'll just, in recycling, one of the things that we're showing our multifamily partners is that through diversion of solid waste into recyclable materials, we can save our property managers 20%. And so over time, as we make that transition, we can get to a cost-neutral standpoint, even a cost-saving standpoint. And that's pretty important because a lot of the decisions we see from everyday folks around sustainability, their first question is, what does it mean? You know, how is it going to affect my wallet? And so that's a real big key point is we need to save people money. And so when we look at a sustainable problem, we're looking at a sustainable solution, but we're also making the economic calculus as well. And so as we go forward, and Ali can speak to this more, we're very much focused on energy, energy burden, energy poverty. We think that that is where we're going to make some of our biggest gains in helping people's wallets.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to that, Ollie?
Well, I think people certainly notice the increase in their energy bill. Mm-hmm. I know I do. We're living in a moment of market volatility in the energy space, and that unpredictability is difficult to manage. So when I talk about the solar energy we're developing, it gives us the ability to take control, mm-hmm. lock in a project where we know what energy will cost and build a financial model that saves the city money, saves residents money, and hedges against whatever international global conflict might cause the next volatility.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. One last question. The Greater Cincinnati Earth Day celebration is coming up this Saturday in Washington Park. I think a lot of people feel very anxious about climate change, especially when they think about the record heat we've gotten in previous summers, these record winter storms. What would you say to people who are just stressed out about all this? They're worried, hey, if I recycle my stuff, is that even making a difference? Any words of wisdom or hope?
Take one action. If it starts with recycling, start with recycling. And I will commend Cincinnatians. I mean, Howard mentioned we have between 60 and 70% of our households participating in the recycling program. That blows the 43% national average out of the water. So people are doing this. If you're already recycling, what comes next? You know, is that your mode of transportation? Is solar on your rooftop a possibility? Can you take a look at composting if you have a yard and eliminate food waste? I think the single best solution to address climate anxiety is climate action. Take control. And people call for institutional governmental change, but I've never seen any institutional or governmental change that didn't start with an individual, right? So be that individual.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with the City of Cincinnati's Sustainability Director, Ollie Kroner, and Environmental Division Manager, Howard Miller. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
This year's Greater Cincinnati Earth Day celebration is Sunday, April 19th, in Over the Rhine. You can find a link with more information at WVXU.org. Up next, we discuss women and power and get tips for building confidence. This is Cincinnati Edition.